Welcome back to Worst Seats in the House. Michael Russo, Anthony LaPanta coming to you from the bowels of Wild headquarters here at 317
bowels,
Washington.
I feel like we're in a fancy space.
Yeah, this is actually, it's the Johns. There's a lot of, we're staring at, Bob Naley, a portrait of him.
And old mafioso pictures. Yeah. I feel like I'm right at home
Norm
here.
Coleman.
Yep.
But this is the old men's club, right, of St. Paul, and it's the Wild headquarters, and we're down here. We just got done with Dean Evason and Billy Guerin's end-of-the-year wrap, but off-season foreshadowing and beyond, and how this team is going to continue to make the next step, continue the building process after its Game 7 loss in Vegas just about a week ago now. It was interesting because obviously they really were very happy with their, and by the way, we might have a special guest coming in here any minute, and that is Billy Guerin might stop in. But it is very clear, Anthony. I mean, they felt like they had a really successful season, a really good regular season, still didn't make that next step, but this is all part of the process to eventually make that next step. And now they're going into a very, very busy offseason that could the priorities are to get Kaprizov signed, to get Fiala signed, to get Eriksson Ek signed, deal with expansion, deal with free agency, potentially make trades. They've got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, there's a ton of stuff ahead, and it's going to be a very busy and defining offseason for what the future of the Wild is. But you always walk away from these things, and to me there's always a few comments that stand out. And the development, yes, the team took a big step. Individuals that took big steps. And I know that there are some that will look at, let's just start with the playoffs, and they'll look and say, oh, it's just typical, another first round. Well, I don't see it that way. They lost to a better team. The deeper team won the series, the better team won the series, and Minnesota pushed them to the limit. I mean, that was what was supposed to happen when a 2-seed plays a 3-seed, and that's what they were. So I don't look at that as a failure, and I also don't look at it as a need to overreact to what was your undoing in that series. So I thought that was interesting, but I thought the let's just start with the comment I thought Billy made that stood out the most to me is what we saw this season were examples of a winning team, and I think that speaks volumes. And I think that's what we saw. We commented on it all year that this was a team that for the first time in maybe in Wild history was finding ways to win games that teams in the past did not.
Yeah.
In fact, they were winning games the way teams used to find ways to win games against the Wild.
Well, a great example is we almost poo-poo the fact that they were so good. Not we, but I'm saying in general, you know, you almost say, all right, you know, you throw away the games against California and Arizona and it's like, well, you're supposed to beat them. Well, these are games that the Wild in the past would play down to their opponent and lose. Right. They rallied
games
back.
Where they would like pound somebody in terms of possession and shots, but then a great player on the other side would score
right.
A goal and you lose the game. And now Minnesota was winning those games.
No doubt about it. And, you know, it was an interesting year. I still think in Game 7 that they could put that game into serious doubt if Brodin doesn't get hurt 5 minutes in and Eriksson Ek isn't playing
question.
On one
They were
leg.
Good enough to win the
yeah.
series. I just
yep.
think the better team won the series. And,
yep.
and that's why you play a best of seven. Most of the time in a best of seven series, the better team wins
yep.
the series.
And
I thought Vegas was better, but I thought Minnesota was good enough to beat them, and that's why there's so much excitement about what's ahead for this club.
Yep. Kaprizov was named a Calder finalist today. I have a feeling on Saturday we're going to find out that Jared Spurgeon is a Lady Bing finalist. My gut says Sunday we're going to find out that Eriksson Ek is not a Selke finalist. I also think Matt Dumb has got a great chance to be a finalist for the Selke. The Masterton and Jack Adams, I think that we're going to see that Dean Evason is definitely in top three. So that also is sort of validates that this was a very different Wild team because we normally don't see players or coaches voted
on. Count on one hand
yeah.
the number of finalists for the voted on awards.
Exactly, and they've had one win in their history, and that was Jack Adams for Jacques in 2003. But they've never had a win, you know, and they've never had a Vizina win, a Calder win, a Hart win, a Selke win,
a
Lady win. Yeah.
No, and I think that when you look at all of them, I mean, I think the Calder's a given with Kaprizov.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that he absolutely was the best rookie in the league. But then the other two, I think it'll be disappointing that Eriksson Ek is not a finalist because I believe he deserves to be in a finalist for that award. I mean, he defines what a Selke forward is.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there are going to be some other guys who had bigger scoring numbers and they'll land there. And then I think Dean Evason is worthy of the Jack Adams. I think And this might be his only year, because now there'll be expectations and they'll say, well, he just met expectations.
Right.
This is the year that they overachieved based on the roster. And it was a turnover. How many times you hear today that we wanted to change the culture, and they did change the culture. This was different. And I think Dean Evason receives, or should receive, a ton of credit for that.
Yeah, the I agree with you. My gut says that Quenneville and Brendan Moore will be the other finalists, and probably will get more votes, but we'll see. But Dean, I would be shocked if he's not in the top three when you look at the years. The only one that I think could compete with Dean maybe is Mike Sullivan in Pittsburgh. You know, they were injury riddled this year and looked like they were on the out, and they wound up with the fifth best record in the NHL, which is why right now the Wild are picking 23rd and 27th in the draft. That will obviously go up a little bit based on the final four teams. Islanders, Montreal, Boston, and Winnipeg all finish below the Wild and the Penguins in the standings. So if they get to the final four, the Wild will move up a little bit in the draft. Let's talk about some of the other things that they talked about. Let's start with the Parisi situation. You know, that was interesting. I mean, Billy Guerin talked about how he and Dean Evason used to play, and they got old too, which I thought, you know, for somebody with 4 years left on his deal, that might be something that might be misconstrued by Zach. But it is interesting. It looks like nothing has really been rectified here, and Zach is gonna, you know, I would be shocked. I think that Billy might have to consider buying him out, but I think he'll investigate the trade market. But I'd be shocked if I wouldn't be shocked if Zach's gonna have to come back and just sort of embrace this role.
I thought Billy's comments on it were really interesting, because he was very matter of fact, and I thought his story about him leaving rinks, driving home pissed off at coaches or general managers, and now he looks back on it and says, well, the guy was just trying to win.
Right.
And he made it clear over and over again during today's conversation that, look, this is a business and we're about trying to win the hockey games. And one of his first comments when he took over as the GM is, we don't get paid to play hockey. We get paid to win hockey games. That's the deal. And so when you look at it that bluntly and just said, look, I mean, if Zach Parise can help us, he'll help us. And if our lineup is better without him, then it's going to be without him. I still think there's probably more to come on this topic.
Yeah, I definitely do.
if you're going to buy him out, it has to happen this year.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the year where the Wild would have any leverage in that situation, because mm-hmm. the last 3 years, the way the contract is structured, this would be the year to do it. But I just think there's a, you know, if you want a guy to embrace whatever that role is, there's got to be buy-in from both sides. And this isn't all on Zach. It's also on the coach and GM to say, all right, if this guy embraces this role, then we gotta make sure he's a part
of
it.
I think you can get him to embrace the role if you say, all right, look, you're going to have to play, you know, we'll start. Look, they played in with Fiala in games 6 and 7. So, you know, it can happen, but look, you're going to have to accept this role, but you know, here's a carrot. We're going to start you next season on the power play. If you perform, you'll stay there. If not, we're going to have to make some changes again, which is what happened this year.
And I mean, that's what I keep going back. This isn't like these guys came in with a preconceived notion. I mean, he started the season on Kaprizov's line.
And on the
number one
unit.
Started the season playing over 20 minutes a night quite often, mm-hmm. close to it most nights, was on the number one power play to the point where they were trying to teach him to be a center so that they could make that first power play unit be what they envisioned, and it didn't work. So that's not a personal thing. It didn't work. So they had to make some changes, and they did, and I just think it's a two-way street.
Yeah.
I think it's you have to have the player has to buy in, and they have to be convinced that he's a team first guy, that the only thing that matters when he gets to the rink in the morning is whether or not the team wins that night.
Yep.
And that's what they are demanding of every guy inside this room. When Zach Parise has played throughout his career, there has never been a question about how hard he works on the ice. He's perhaps the hardest worker on the ice every single night. But then I think on the coaching and general manager side, there is some responsibility there too, where it has to be, okay, but if that is the way you come to the rink every day and you continue to bring that kind of effort on the ice, that then you'll be rewarded, just like Dean has always preached about every player on his roster. If you play great, you'll play more. And if you're having a tough night, you'll play less. That's just the way it works.
No doubt about it. I just think the one where they did get stubborn was in the on the power play in the playoffs and things like that. I think that's where they probably should have thrown them a carrot. Expansion was a very minor subject today, and I think the reason why is because it's so much can happen before that they've got this plan, but it's very very difficult because if they make some trades, obviously that could alleviate some issues. It's going to be really fascinating what they do right now. The one thing that Billy said at the end there is that he won't necessarily go to guys like, he didn't use the names, but Suter or Parisi, and ask him to waive their no move if he doesn't need to. I still think they go the 7-3-1 route. I just think you maximize there, and then you just deal with however the Dumba, maybe you make a deal with them not to take Dumba, or maybe you just say, all right, you got a choice between Dumba and Soucy, and take your pick. And if they happen to take Dumba, it just means that you gain $6 million in cap space. And at that point also, it means that you've probably exhausted trade talks for the second offseason in a row. And since it hasn't happened yet, maybe you're just assuming, he's almost untradeable, right? I mean, he makes $7.4 million next year. He's got only 2 years left on his deal too. So any team making a trade for Dumba has got to say, all right, well, we could lose him in a couple of years as well. So it's just really interesting going into this expansion. And I know that it gives Wild fans PTSD just because of what happened with Alex Tuch.
Yes, all that's true. And I just think there are so many variables, and we've studied it so many times from the Wild's perspective, but so much of this depends on, well, what is everybody else going to do?
Yeah, exactly.
What other goaltenders are available? What other defensemen are available? Mm-hmm. And so you have to start to strategize that way to say, all right, well, if we think there's a chance that they're going to take this guy from this team instead. Yeah. And, those things are what makes it so impossible to predict. And I can't remember who asked the question, but he was like, well, there's a little more to it than that. We just accept the fact that we're going to lose a player.
They
are going to lose a player, but there's a lot of planning that goes into it. And I've been thinking about the Alex Tuch situation. So the Wild basically trade Alex Tuch to say, if we'll give you Alex Tuch if you'll take Eric Halla instead of Brody or Dumba.
Yeah.
Right? As much as we look at that and say, oh, the Wild gave away two players, right now, would you rather have Alex Tuch and Eric Halla or Brody or Dumba?
Mm-hmm.
I think the right decision was made. I think it's
more like the prospect and what he became. Like, could you have given him Greenway? Could you have given him Cunning or whoever?
Maybe, but the point is simply that what they were trying to protect was the assets they were trying to protect were Brodin and Dumba.
Yep.
And they would have lost one of those guys for certain to Vegas if not for this trade.
Yeah, because they protected Brodin, but it was just,
you
could have protected Dumba. I mean, one of those two.
One of the two was going to go to Vegas.
And the other thing that people always forget is the Wild did not want them to take Scandella because they needed Scandella to trade Scandella in the Foligno deal.
Correct.
They needed to get rid of more money. So
exactly.
That was the other thing.
But my point is, right, they were trying to protect two more defensemen.
Yeah, it wasn't just that they were trying to protect one of those two. Right. They needed to keep their top five intact.
And they were going to lose one, without a doubt, to Vegas if they didn't make that trade. So, I don't know. I think we'll see fewer of those additional trades and a much smaller return for Seattle as the second asset, so to speak, in some of those trades than what we saw last time around. But there will be some of them. And, what I think is so interesting to listen to Billy talk is that I think he's 100% legitimate when he says we will consider any deal. I don't think he looks at this ever. I don't think that's just GM speak. I don't think he's ever looking at this as like, there's no way we deal that guy. I really think if the right deal crossed his desk for
absolutely
any player on this roster, he would pull the trigger. And sometimes that's easier when you're not the guy that brought the piece in. You're not the guy that drafted him. You're not the guy that acquired him. Where, if you remember, when the GM change was made a few years ago and Paul Fenton came in, it was Craig Leopold's answer was, I just felt like we needed somebody without bias, without a preconceived allegiance to some of these players. And right or wrong, sometimes you have to do that because you just get attached to a guy.
You see him with scout's eyes. You know, this is what you always say. All right, I drafted that guy because I expect him to be this. Right. And if he doesn't reach it, you just continue on to give him more rope and more rope and more rope.
Right. And so Billy's been able to sever ties quickly and make deals with guys because he could view them just black and white as an asset, not, and I don't mean to sound impersonal about this, but not as a human, not as a guy that I know so well personally, that I've watched develop, that I've had in the organization for 6, 8 years, whatever it might be. It was just on paper, this guy. And one of the deals that stands out most to me was the deal with Nashville where he sent Luke Kunin. It was, I watched Luke Kunin. Here's what I think of him. I think Nick Bonino helps us just as much. We get a second asset in the trade because Kunin's younger, and we pull the trigger.
And they really got three assets because the
they're
Wild
able to move
because the Wild, you know, not only get the second to get Khuznadinov, but they get an extra pick that they use bundled with one of theirs to get Damon Hunt. So, you know, that's going to be, the jury's out for a while. I mean, you know, I think that the Wild feel that Luke Kunin is what he is at this point, and you know, maybe he turns into a great player, maybe he doesn't, but you know, it's all going to be on what Hunt and Khuznadinov does.
Right.
You know, it's really interesting. You talk about the trades and things like that. Now, somebody asked him about Jack Eichel, not knowing that if he mentions Jack Eichel's name, Craig Leupold is going to probably be out $1 million and maybe a pick. He's not allowed to talk about players from other teams. But that's the one that's going to be really, really interesting here because the Wild obviously would like to get a number one center. I don't think he wants to give up everything for that number one center to get Jack Eichel at $10 million. You're going to have to give up some significant money there because, again, the Wild have $22 million in cap space. A huge chunk of that's going to Kaprizov, Fiala, Eriksson, Ek. So, you know, it almost, if you do the math that Eichel's cost you 10, you're going to have to say that we're going to probably, Dumba's got to be in that deal and probably even Fiala, and that would almost get you a little more than the 10. It's going to be really interesting. It can't just be for futures. There's no way the Wild can make it work. It's got to be for money going out and money coming in. And the question is, is that something that even Buffalo would be interested in since neither of those two players are centers? I mean, it's going to be fascinating to watch. There's other variables here too. You got his health situation. Guy's got a neck injury that created a huge rift between him and the organization. You've got to make sure that you're completely fine with that to add that type of thing, or it could be an absolute catastrophic mistake. You got to check his character. You got to check all this type of stuff. And then even then, you might not have the pieces to make it work.
Yeah, and I think Billy downplayed the need to upgrade at center and talked about the fact that offense on forward lines can be driven by wings, and that's true. But I think we saw down the stretch that, I mean, everybody knows it. They need to upgrade in the middle on their roster. Maybe that starts with Marco Rossi, that's a significant upgrade there. I would have liked to have heard him comment on Nico Sturm and his development this year, because I think he showed that he can be a valuable piece as a center. And, you know, but I don't know what the upward limit might be, the upward ceiling on where he fits in the lineup, but there will be an upgrade in the middle of this lineup, of this roster, for certain this offseason, I think. And you know, we got a lot more to talk about with all this stuff and what's ahead, but I want to just talk about my favorite place to shop, and that's Kowalski's. We talked so many times.
I was a beneficiary of that the other day.
Came over for a great dinner. We actually had a few of them, and had
what kind of steak did you make that
we
night?
We had Akaushi.
Yeah.
Akaushi steak and some shrimp that was phenomenal that I really liked. And you know, we talk a lot about the meat and seafood, and I think that's where they separate themselves from every other grocery store, but their produce is also off the charts. Can't miss with most of it. And it's always fresh, you're never disappointed. And one of the things I love, and I tried them only because of the box. They come in this little cardboard box. They call them forest to fork mushrooms, and they are awesome. So check those out next time you're there if you're a mushroom guy. They are phenomenal. I couldn't get Russo to try them the other night. But,
yeah, I'm not a mushroom guy.
But we tried them. So if it's the best place to go. If you're going to have a great meal, you got to shop at Kowalski's for the best. I am dead serious. I am dead serious.
Wait till you hear what I'm about to do.
Yeah.
So
I hope you're getting paid.
Well, I'm
very
just.
Little for that, because you didn't sell Kowalski's hard enough.
All right. If you were going to have a great meal.
Kowalski's, absolutely.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
If you want the best, you're gonna have the best. If you have great guests coming over,
if you don't, you're just a fool.
Right. Yeah.
So if you're gonna have the best. In fact, you want to know something? I've shared this story with a few people. You and I did a show just before Christmas, and it was a Zoom show. We were chatting and you said, "Hey, I'm just curious. Like, do you do the authentic Italian?" Feast of Seven Fishes, right? Picture. And so that day, we never had, because I've got a bunch of family that they don't like seafood and everything. My brothers, my mom, and stuff like that. But I don't hold it against my mom, but I hold it against my brothers. Sure. But so this was the 23rd of July, and we got done with our Zoom show, and I was like, tonight it's just my kids here. I'm going to the store. I yelled upstairs. I said, "Hey, I'm going to the grocery store. I'll be back. You know, everybody, make sure you're here for dinner tonight at 7 o'clock." I went to like six different stores that day, trying to get exactly what I wanted. And I came home. I didn't tell anybody what we were doing. And I was like, "God, we're having dinner. You all want to be here. Don't miss this." We ended up doing the Feast of Seven Fishes only because of your recommendation, and it is now on the family. Like, everybody said, this was our favorite night of the holiday season. So from here forward, the 23rd of December every year, we have vowed we are going to do the Feast of Seven Fishes, and it was all because of your recommendation for it.
I'm glad I could. Yeah, and that's like your new Festivus.
It is. Feats of strength first. Yeah.
He told you about Kwassies. Let me tell you about Profile by Sanford. Let's face it, when it comes to losing weight, most of us don't care how we get there, but once we reach our goal, we end up right there. We started and gain it all back. You've seen that happen to me, Billy. Yeah. So anyway, that's what I love about Profile by Sanford. I'm in it for the long haul. Profile knows that losing weight isn't always a straight line. There's lots of ups and downs. I'm so thankful to my Profile coach that she keeps me on track when I need it most. I can't say enough about Profile. It's changed my life, and it can change yours. Profile has 6 metro locations, as well as Mankato, St. Cloud, and Rochester. Don't wait. Call today or visit profileplan.com for a location nearest you, and use the promo code RUSSO for a special discount. That's profileplan.com. And here's a word from Bosch Law Firm.
Jerry Bosch here from Bosch Law Firm and workcompexperts.com. If you've been injured at work, call us. Even if the insurer is paying your claim, we'd be happy to discuss your situation to make sure you're being paid all the appropriate benefits. I can guarantee you that the insurance company is not telling you everything you need to know to maximize the value of your claims and protect your future. The call is always free, and there's never a fee unless we win benefits on your behalf, and we service clients all over the state of hockey. So please call the Work Comp experts at Bosch Law Firm, 651-333-8300, or find us at workcompexperts.com.
Back here, worse seats than
that. Do you go in person?
I do. Yeah, that's nice. No, I did virtual like coaching during the pandemic. Yeah. But the one thing I have learned is traveling during the hockey season is not as easy.
Yeah. It'll be a challenge. Yeah. It'll be a challenge. But you've lost a ton of weight. How much weight have you lost?
Yeah, at my peak, I was down 30 pounds. I'm probably about 20, down 22 pounds now.
What was your playing weight compared to now?
Well, no, you know what? I weighed in this morning at 233. I was close to 220 by the end of my career, but my prime playing weight was probably 215.
You're being into like the Peloton thing now, right?
I love it. Yeah. I'm either on the Peloton tread or the Peloton bike, or doing off like running with Peloton on my headphones. And you know what? Because it just takes the thinking out of it for me, and it's just, you know, it's fun.
I was out for a walk at the football stadium in Arizona, and Billy was out for a run there. So I went for the walk. Billy went for the run.
Yeah, boy, that's a killer run down there at this time of the year.
Oh, yeah, it was hot.
Like you melt when you run down there.
Yeah, it was that was hot. Vegas was hot, and running on the – you try to time it where there's not a lot of people on the strip, but I was out for a run, and – there's a lot of secondhand weed smoke out there too. Yeah. You gotta try to avoid that as best you can. It's absolutely disgusting. Like you're running and all of a sudden a big puff of smoke comes. You're like, oh God.
Right. Well, and you know, the other option is like when I run there, I'll run off the strip, but you get about 3 blocks away and now you're like hurtling homeless people on the side. It isn't very far off the strip before you run into like a little bit of a sketchy area.
Yeah. No, I ran the strip a couple times. My biggest one, I did a 5 mile run the other day. Or, you know, whenever it was last week or 2 weeks ago now, and went from our place almost to like circus. And it's you see a lot.
Yeah.
You see a lot.
Yeah. We were just talking about and reflecting back on what you and Dean had to say about the season. And we've listened to a lot of these over the years. And to me, there's always a couple comments that a general manager or a coach will make that kind of stand out. And I thought one today that you made that was interesting was you said, we saw some examples this year of a winning team. When you reflect back on all of it, what are some of those things? Like what examples did you see that tell you this team's on the track to being a winning club?
You know what? Honestly, it's a small thing, but, and I was not a shot blocker, to say the least when I played, but you have to do it in today's game. And I think the commitment and the sacrifice, when you see the number of shots that our players blocked, was remarkable. I think you saw things like, I think it was the last regular season game against Vegas when Marcus jumped in to protect Kaprizov, but then Kaprizov also fought his own battle. Things like that. I think little things like there's a stoppage in play on our own end and Cam Talbot, he'll just tap the D-man on the shin pads with his stick. You know, things that you – and hearing from the players in their end of the year meetings and hearing from the coaches, like there's accountability within the players and they're telling each other the hard things. And that's when you know you really have a tight team. That's a true tight team. Like I think a lot of people think your close teams are ones that go out and drink beer together and do that. That's all good and fun. But when you have accountability in the room from your peers and say the hard things and do the hard things, that's when you're really talking. But it's things like that made me happy.
We saw so many examples of that, little things when you'd just be watching from afar and you'd see a guy do that. And how much of that do you think came from Cam Talbot? You mentioned him already, but I felt like all year his even keel approach and his no excuses approach, like there were so many games afterward where a goal went in and it was never, well, I couldn't see it, this guy deflected it. It was always 100% of the responsibility, and it just seemed like the players seemed to feed off that.
Yeah. I mean, look, you can't play the blame game or anything like that, and I think Cam's just got a good way about him. He's even keel. He's professional. He understands it. He doesn't fly off the handle. I think he had a big impact on our room. I think on the ice, too, like not just the saves, but when you look back there and your goalie is calm and he's got everything under control and he makes some saves look easy. And that gives you a feeling of confidence and he reassures you guys and it's a good feeling. He's had a big, big impact here.
We should like say who this is, by the way. Billy Guerin who walked in to join us. I mean, if you didn't recognize the voice.
Yeah. It was me pretending like I'm the GM. Which I've done. I do that every day. Let me ask you, I mean, the one thing we haven't discussed so far on the podcast is the Kaprizov, Fiala, Eriksson Ek deals. I mean, you know, you have $22 million in cap space now. By the way, I haven't mentioned that you guys were $30,000 under the cap ceiling this year, so you will not have an overage next year, which is pretty impressive that that you guys managed that. I don't know how you did it. I think it was,
I don't either. Yeah. You're gonna have to ask Chris O'Hearn.
Yeah. I think it was the Nico Stern back and forth on the daily basis as what accrued the space. Because he was the one guy that didn't require waivers, so he can go down and it would never affect his actual paycheck. But these guys are going to get a lot of that money. I mean, how do you go about, doing this right now, but also filling out the rest of your roster because you only have 14 guys signed?
Yeah, it's not going to be easy, but you know what? we're just going to look for fair deals. And you know what? We're not going to be taken advantage of, but we're also not going to try to lowball anybody. I think there's always common ground. There's always a fair deal to be made that makes the player happy and makes the team happy. You know what? These guys are going to get what they've earned. And you know what? It might affect certain guys in different ways, but you know, hey, look, these guys have emerged as very important players for our team, and they're going to get paid. But there's a level of getting paid. It's not just blank checks and carte blanche. No, this is there's a process to it, and they all have good agents, reasonable guys that we can work with.
Without getting into specifics, because I know you can't and you won't, but when you're in a spot like that where you have three guys, do you try to work the deals simultaneously, or do you say, let's get this one done first and then see what we have left to negotiate with the other two? Is it just kind of a let's build, because you have to have an idea from the beginning what each of the three is going to take?
Yeah, I think you prioritize. I mean, it's kind of tough in this situation because you really do want to get them all done as quickly as possible. But yeah, you have to prioritize. And by prioritize, I don't mean like one's more important than the other. I guess that's what prioritizing means, but I don't really mean it that way. It's just, which one might take a bigger chunk than the other one, because they're all, like I said, they're all extremely important to us and they mean a lot. So, yeah, I'd like some sort of a summer too. So I'd like to get cracking on this.
Right. Ditto, by the way. I'm gonna send you all my trips so you could tell me when.
Which ones you have to bring a computer?
Yeah. So I'm not in Cabo writing the Bill Guerin's Hired by the Wild story.
Yeah, boy.
You know what golf course you're on, Panther.
Yeah, right.
I'll flatten it.
You got to remember, it ain't easy being Russo. So if you're in Cabo and you have to write a story, I mean.
Right, it's tough.
I can post a quick tweet from the third tee if I have to.
Yeah, exactly.
The only problem for me is sometimes I lose signal in the weeds when I'm wandering around looking for my ball. I lose phone service a little bit. So
I know it well.
Let me ask you, I know that you've heard this not a lot, especially if you listen to this podcast, but center position. That was a definite subject in today's presser with you. And it was interesting listening to you talk about it, because it sounds like that you even would agree that you'd like to upgrade that position, but you're also not going to tear the team apart to do it. And what I liked or what I found interesting what you said is that this is still a process and that you're methodically going to go about it, but there might come a point where maybe that is something that you swing for this summer.
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on the deal. It all depends on who's available. I can't say that, yes, we are going to upgrade the center position, because we don't know what's out there. We don't know, and if somebody's available, what's the asking price? Will that tear down everything that we've built up? Are we willing to sacrifice that? Like, there are a lot of different questions to it, and I know this market has been like, starving for the number one center and this and that. It just doesn't, they don't grow on trees, and that doesn't mean instant success too. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't.
Well, look at some of the teams that have those number one centers.
Yeah, right. You know what? And I really believe too, like I believe that there's gotta be one guy on the line, in your top six, like Kaprizov, like, he drives the offense. Mm-hmm. Okay, then Fiala, he drives the offense. We need to make sure our centers can play in their own end and can play a 200-foot game. Like I said, it's not 1986 where, it's the old school center that has it, enters the zone in the center of the ice and dishes it to a streaking winger and he takes a slap shot and scores. That's not the way the game's played anymore. You need your centers to be, two-way, you look at Patrice Bergeron, like, he's not your typical playmaking center or anything like that, but he's been the best two-way forward in the league for the past 10 years. And like, to some level, that's what you really need your centers to be. You don't need Connor McDavid. And if you feel you need Connor McDavid, you're in trouble, because those guys don't come around. Sidney Crosby doesn't come around all that often. So and it's not proven, like those guys don't win every single year. Mm-hmm. You know, it's you have to have four lines that can play and four lines that can play on both sides of the both ends of the rink.
One of the guys that I thought this year really took a huge step was Nico Sturm. And
yeah.
He looks like a guy who maybe can't drive a line, but for sure can provide some speed down the middle and could be a valuable part of this club moving forward.
Yeah. And I had a meeting, end of the year meeting with him the other day, and I just told him how happy I was with his production. And it was a little kind of touch and go at the beginning of the year because you're like, God, you know, I want to see him produce a little bit more, you know, give a little bit more. But I think it was just a confidence thing. And, you know, he even said, like, you got to find out how much rope you're going to be allowed. So if you try a play and it doesn't work, you don't get benched,
right.
which is smart for a young kid. Yep. You know, you got to be responsible. So I think as his confidence grew, as the season went along, he started taking a few more, calculated risk and making a few more plays because the coaches had trust in him. And it was great to see. He scored some great goals. He scored some big goals and made some nice plays. And we're going to expect that from him in the future.
Let me ask you about Matt Boldy. You know, I loved what you said on my other podcast when we talked about Boldy, about, you know, kind of like, you know, just put yourself in perspective, and you could relate to this with two boys, you know, of that 20-year-old running around in his car. And, you know, you compared it to Liam. Like, yeah. Matt Boldy is your son's age. Mm-hmm. And could you imagine your son playing in the NHL at this point? No offense, Liam, if you're listening. That is what I think a lot of fans don't get. And the other issue here that I always bring up that I'm completely on board with is I look at the history of the Wild, which obviously you weren't part of, and the Wild had a history of rushing guys to the NHL. It is unbelievable how few AHL games the Wild's young players have accrued that they have historically tried to rely upon deep, deep, deep into their careers. And you have still a couple guys on this team. It feels like that is what you're trying to avoid here, is to have Matt Boldy, you know, continue to develop, not putting him in a position that he's going to be over his head in and sort of pay his dues.
Yeah, and it's not just pay your dues to pay your dues. It's pay your dues to be ready, to have an impact, so you don't have to figure things out at this level. Go, you know, learn as much as you can at the American League level. And I'm not pushing him down there right away. We got to see how he does in camp, but it won't hurt. And you know, everybody says you can bring them up too early, but you can't leave them down there long enough. Like it's like just let them bake, you know. Let them, you know what? You had 5 points this weekend in two games. Great. Let's see it again. Okay, you did it again. Great. Let's see it again and keep going. And, you know, there are a lot of other things to learn. There's off ice things. There's, you know, dealing with the travel and, you know, there's just so much. So, and like I said, these guys are so important to the future of our team and our organization that we just don't want to force feed them. We don't want to, you know, I don't know what went on here in the past, so I can't comment on that, but I can, you know, we had a great track record in Pittsburgh with development and Wilkes-Barre, and guys spent time there. Jake Gensel spent time there, you know, Brian Rust and all these guys like Connor Sherry, you know, Matt Murray, all these guys spent significant time. Brian Dumoulin spent 3 years in Wilkes-Barre. You know, even a guy I played with, Rob Scuderi, he spent 5 years in the minors. I mean, those are, you know, Brian Dumoulin's a great defenseman in our league. He spent 3 years developing down there. And anybody would want Brian Dumoulin on their team. And I'm not saying everybody's got to spend 3 years, but everybody's on their own timetable. So we have to take them as individual cases and do what we need to do.
One of the first big decisions that you had to make with this club was when you decided to change coaches last year. And you brought Dean Evason in, and I think now looking back on it, I mean, I don't know if even you at that moment would have thought that he was likely to be your long-term successor for Bruce Boudreau. But then over the course of the summer, it just seemed like you guys were so in sync. And I thought, even as you sat at the table today and looked at each other and, you know, we agree on this, we agree on this. And so many comments about culture. When you look back now, mean, what did you see in Dean right from the beginning that led you to believe that this was even a possibility? Because it certainly seems to be the perfect fit here for this club and for the culture you want to create.
Yeah, well, first of all, Dean and I have, you know, worked on the relationship and gotten to know each other very well. And we are very much in sync. Do we agree on every little thing? No, we don't. And we've had some doozy arguments and things like that. Which,
on what subject?
And who? But I believe it's healthy, respectful conflict at times that makes a relationship better, and it makes it that you get through it, you survive it, so you're not afraid to do it again, knowing that the relationship's going to survive. So we are very much on the same page, and we talk about everything. And you know what? He understands. Like, we all do our job. Dean understands it. I'm the GM. I'll get him the players, and he'll coach the players. You know what? Do I get his input every now and then? Yeah, sure. But not, you know, that's just the way we work. So when we made the change, you know, I knew Dean had great, you know, great track record and reputation from Milwaukee. I played against him. I knew what he was all about. I watched him play when I was a kid, and he was an older player. I always like to throw that in because I lived 40 miles from Hartford. But look, he had the experience at the junior level, so he understood young players. He had the experience in the American League, so he understood the daily life of an American League guy and how good some of these guys that aren't in our league and that they can play and they need a chance. He had experience coaching in the NHL in Washington as an assistant, and then he had the playing experience. So as we went along, we got to know each other better. I really like Dean. He's an awesome guy. He's funny and he's gritty. He's a no BS guy. I said, if we're going to, and I always said, we're going to do a full search, but that's exactly what I was looking for. Mm-hmm. And I like the guy. And, you know, he's very just matter of fact. And he's like, you know what? Sometimes he'll just say, you know what? I don't give a shit. I'll work with him. Mm-hmm. I'll play him. It doesn't matter. Just give me who you want to give me. And like, to get that from a head coach it's pretty awesome. Like, yeah. So we have a really good working relationship, and I think it's gone well. And I think him and the whole staff has kind of evolved together. I think Bobby Woods has gotten better this year. Darby has gotten better. He's got more responsibility. Brett McLean came up from Iowa and he's done a great job with us. And Freddie Shabbat's done a fantastic job with the goalies. And, you know, even our video guys, Jonas Plum and TJ Jindra are awesome, and it's a big group, and we all sit together after every game and just go through it, and we get a lot done.
I think what you're describing is similar to what Dean described to me. I remember within a week or two of when he had gotten hired as the interim head coach, we sat down and I asked him about how it would change his relationship with the staff being now the head coach as opposed to an assistant. And he said, this is a we thing, not a me thing. This is, I want everybody's input. We are going to sit down and look at lineups. We are going to look at power plays. We are going to look at this. And it was very clear that he wanted people, he wanted to hear their opinion. He wanted them to disagree with him when he thought he was wrong. And it sounds like he has a very similar approach within his coaching staff that you're describing between you and him.
Yeah, it's a collaboration. And you have to be confident enough to empower other people. I think that's a you know, for Dean, I think it's a good big sign of leadership, you know. And you know what? It's not just about what I think, and it's not just about what I want to decide or the lines I want or the power play I want. Let's talk about this. Everybody else has good ideas. Like, you know, when I go upstairs here, I don't know everything. I don't have all the idea. You know, I don't have all the answers. You definitely don't. You have to rely on everybody else, and you want them to feel good about themselves and empowered and able to speak up without, you know, getting dumped on. And, you know, I think that's the kind of culture that we've built here. And it's just what we like. You know, everybody's got a voice and everybody's got, you know, the freedom to say what they want. And hey, in the end, Dean is a decision maker for the coaches. I am the decision maker for, you know, the hockey ops. But everybody knows that, so let's not make a big deal out of it.
You can always read The Athletic for all the answers, because I have them.
Oh, and that, yeah. too. And we steal
start all the every ideas. Meeting with that.
Yeah, we do. Yep. We do. Let's take
a look at what Russo said yesterday.
We read a paragraph out loud to each other
and laugh.
Yeah.
No. I was going to
find this out.
Most of the time he's just making it up.
Yeah.
Let me, if you have to go, just, we won't be upset. It's nice of you to pop in, but, we were talking before you showed up that, expansion is something that always gives Wild fans anxiety attacks just for, based on what happened last time.
Fans get anxiety.
I don't know. I'm calm and cool collected on it, but, it is interesting because you and I, at the very beginning, when we talked about expansion months and months ago, it was just like, well, you're just going to lose one good player. But when you're actually in your chair now, it could create mental gymnastics when you start to think, all right, well, maybe I could do this to keep this guy and this to keep that guy. And yeah,
there's a lot of moving parts. And it's not just all with Seattle. It's within your organization and what you can do to, you know, protect or keep the guys that you want to keep. So yeah, there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot to go over. And then, you know, can we get, you know, we're going to have a plan A and try to execute that. And if not, we're really going to need a plan B too and understand like, well, okay, if plan A doesn't happen, we need to be able to go to this and expect this to happen. So there's a lot of planning going on, you know, right now. We were talking about it this morning and really going over it and situations that we can try to execute.
Because also, if you make trades before, also that's going to change protection lists, who you might acquire, somebody you have to protect or you know.
Yeah, exactly. We don't know what's going to happen. I mean, the phone could ring tomorrow and you know, a potential deal is on the table or could happen, and then it changes everything. So, yeah, you got to be pretty flexible.
How different do you think this expansion draft will feel just based on the way Vegas was able to exploit so many teams, made awesome deals with several clubs? Do you think just in a general feel around the league, the teams are going to be a lot less willing to give those major second assets kind of deals?
Yeah, yes and no. Look, I was a big talker in that too. Oh, we're not giving up anything or this. But, you know, we also want to preserve what we've built, you know, and I think a lot of teams will be like that. And, you know, so, you know, I think some teams will be like, you know what, no, take who you want to take. But other teams are like, no, you know, we've built this to where we're very happy with it and we don't want to take a step back. So let's give them what we feel like giving them to take something else. Mm-hmm. So I think you're going to see a bunch of different things, but yeah, it could be all over the map.
How much time do you spend studying what other teams, what your best guess is at what they're going to leave exposed so that then you can project what Seattle's going to need when they look at your roster?
Yeah, there is some time that goes into that. Not as much time as what is how we're focusing on ourselves. But we do look at the other teams.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's like, I know Wild fans are really worried about goaltending, but, you know, potentially Seattle's going to have their run of the litter of 10 or 12 guys and that there's really nothing to be worried about. You know, sometimes you got to think about that too.
Yeah, you definitely do. Yeah, you really have to try to think about everything and not you know, not just be so sure of yourself that you skip one step and then you're kind of like, oh, geez, man.
Yeah, we didn't have to give up that second to protect Talbot. They had
exactly. So it's you got to do your homework.
Yeah, exactly.
When you look back now at the season, and you know, you look at the year Kirill Kaprizov had, and this was a player that all of us had watched on video really only, and not a ton of time seeing him in person, and then you know the way he hit the. Just absolutely got off to the start that he did. He scores the overtime winner on game one. I mean, it's just, it felt like a storybook. But as you watch now over the course of the season and look back, did he surprise you in any way? Did he exceed your expectations in any way? Was there a part of his game that you didn't know was there?
You know what? You know what I loved about him, honestly? And he's such a good teammate. And he just brought life. Like, you know, not just on the ice, but like the guys love him. Like he's popular in the dressing room. He doesn't let the language barrier get in the way. He's like, and his English is just getting better every day. It just, and his compete, like his desire, all that stuff, his toughness, like, you know, how he went after, you know, he didn't back down from White Cloud. He actually just popped him right in the face. And that was, it was great. He, you know, he fought his own battle. And, you know, you see him too, like, I think it was in San Jose when Logan Couture hit him. You know, it was a good hit, whatever, and he dusted himself off and he went right back at him and just and hit him.
Yep.
And it was, you know, he did that with in Vegas against Stevenson one night too. And like, you know, the goals and the assists and all that stuff, that's great. You know, he exceeded all of our expectations. But that compete and that grittiness and that personality is really what I enjoyed getting to know.
Well, even the way he battled when it was early in the year, he was on the ice every shift against Drew Doughty, against Brent Burns. And I mean, and those guys were handling him the star treatment, so to speak, you know, where he was getting the cross checks in the back and yet he just seemed to relish in it.
You know, we talked about it in his end of the year meeting that the league's going to open up and we're going to play against all the other teams and you're not a secret anymore. So be ready. You know, don't expect to be come in under the radar again. You're not. So, and he understands that. He's very sharp. You know, he's not. I mean, he's a very bright kid, and he's just got a good handle on what's going on.
Last question for you. So what now for the rest of we obviously know all your to-do list for the Wild, but you also have a secondary role with USA Hockey and the Olympic team next year. We obviously still don't even know if technically there's going to be an Olympics that aren't going to include NHL players, but we're assuming so. What's your role now with that, and how often will you meet, all that type of stuff with Stan Bowman?
Yeah, I don't know. Actually, you know, it stands on my list to call. You know, I was just trying to get through the last couple of days, but I'm sure we'll have, you know, quite a few discussions on, you know, the Olympics and, possible orientation camp or summer training camp or something like that, if we're even able to do it. But yeah, something I'm really excited about. It's going to be tough. You know, hopefully we get the word sometime that we're 100% going, but, I'm you know, there's a lot going on, but it's a lot of good stuff, and I'm really excited about it.
Well, hey, Billy, I really appreciate you popping in here and chatting with Anthony and me, and have a feeling I'll be bothering you a bunch here in the next little while. A lot of text messages and emails and bothersome phone calls.
Yeah, no problem. You know, I'm 7-Eleven, always open, just like when I played.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Thanks, Billy. That's Billy Guerin, the Wild general manager. You're listening to Worst Seats in the House, Anthony LaPanta, Michael Russo. And by the way, if you're trying to sell your house or your apartment or your condo or your cabin, I have the person to call, and that is Chris Lindahl Real Estate. I've known Chris for, 4 or 5 years. He was the first person I called because I saw his billboards all around town when I was trying to sell my unsellable condo in downtown Minneapolis. This was a condo that was an awesome place, awesome spot, but we had these assessments and mine was going to be close to 40 or 50 grand. Well, not only did he and his staff, Jenna Tack, who was one of his also real estate agents who I dealt with a lot, not only did they stage my place, but they got the person that bought my place to absorb the assessments, which was obviously a huge, huge, huge sigh of relief for me. If you are trying to sell your house, your condo, if you're trying to buy a house or condo, definitely call Chris Lindahl Real Estate today at 763-401-SOLD or go to chrislindahl.com to request a no obligation guaranteed offer on your home as well. That's chrislindahl.com. And here's a word from Minnesota Propane.
Did you know that a propane gas furnace lifespan averages 20 years? While electric heat pumps only last 14 years. And propane furnaces work in all temperatures while delivering warm and consistent heat to your home. Why buy two heating systems when one propane furnace can do it all? It lasts longer, works better, and it costs less. These things and more are done with propane today. The right energy, right now. We also want to thank realtor Heather Womack.
Well, it's almost summer here in Minnesota, and you know what that means. Hot, humid days to come. Make sure you are prepared and staying cool with my friends over at Aquarius Home Services. They are offering an AC tune-up for $49, or if it's time to replace, Aquarius has great options for new air conditioners and provide some great interest-free financing programs. It all starts with an in-home visit to discuss your needs and provide options to that make sense for you. At Aquarius, your comfort and safety are always a top priority. Aquarius believes in earning the right to be recommended. They're just a click away at AquariusHomeServices.com, and don't forget to mention Russo sent you. So, Anthony, what do you make of Billy?
It's
nice of him to pop in.
Yeah, great of him to stop by. I mean, he's just such a legit guy. And, I mean, obviously he's got information that he's not going to share with us, but yet you feel like you can trust every word that he says. And mm-hmm. I think that bleeds through to the organization. I thought it was really interesting, the comments he made about Dean Evason. And it was something I had been meaning to ask him for a while, that because I really, to this day, I wonder, if not for COVID, would Dean Evason be the head coach of this club? I think when he was named the interim coach, I would have, just a guess, I would have pegged him as a long shot to become the permanent coach. And Billy had talked about doing an extensive search at the end of the season, but the end of that season got delayed so long mm-hmm. that you ended up with all that from March until August or late July, when the return to play in the bubble started. Yep. There was no off season to search. So during those times, I think Billy and Dean had a chance to basically have about a 3-month job interview. That if Billy's out interviewing a whole bunch of other people at that time, I mean, let's assume that like Minnesota didn't make some kind of miracle run in what would have been a regular postseason. I'm not positive that, you know, Dean's likely to be the guy, but because you have those 3 months to chat and I do think they're very much in sync. They seem like two that see things very similarly. I think they're a perfect fit, and I'm glad it worked out the way it did for both of them. But I really, I thought it was interesting the way he said, well, I was going to do an extensive search, but it turns out this guy that was right in front of me had all the attributes for which I was looking.
Yep. No, it makes a lot of sense. And, I think it's also good, the disagreements that he was talking about too, because I think a lot of times, even in Dean's position, when you're sort of brand new to the NHL as a head guy and you're being replaced by somebody that just fired, you're replacing the person that just got fired. A lot of times you're probably just going to let the GM run the show and not get into those disagreements because you're almost in self-preservation mode.
But you know Dean well enough to know. Yeah. He is not wired to be a guy to just keep his mouth shut and sit on the side.
Yep. No, I agree with you there. So it'll be pretty interesting.
But I love that. And I love Billy saying, look, I mean, he's got to come in. And if he doesn't tell me what he honestly thinks, even when you disagree with me, then this isn't going to work.
Yeah. And it is. I just find it interesting the relationship that they have generated and he's got 1 year left on his deal. So he's going to probably be, we keep on talking about Kaprizov and Fiala and Eriksson Ek. Well, Dean's probably in line for an extension this summer too, at a good timing too, because probably next week he's going to be a Jack Adams finalist. So Eriksson Ek becomes, has this monster year before a contract year, and potentially Dean does as well. And I'm sure Dean's agent, if he has an agent, is going to be probably all over Billy on that. Last question of the show. It comes from a guy named Ryan Bass, I believe his name is. His Twitter account is cbass99. So I don't know if you're going to know that name, but he goes, can you ask LaPanta if he remembers my overtime winning goal from 1995 for Irondale versus Centennial? He called the game, and I have it on VHS tape if you need it for your resume. So do you remember the Irondale Centennial overtime winner in 95?
Send it to me. It would have been a regular season game, because I don't believe Irondale played Centennial. They weren't in the same section then. Mm-hmm. So it would have been a regular season game. I don't recall the specific game, but we didn't do a ton of Irondale games back then. We'd do maybe a couple a year tops, but unfortunately I really don't. And I remember so many of those games. I see people almost, I'd say, not weekly, maybe weekly, where they'll, hey, did you remember me? I played on this team that year or whatever. And most of the time, especially if it was playoff games, I remember the specifics. This one, I don't recall it. It doesn't surprise me, though, that it happened. I do remember a couple of Irondale games back in those early 90s where Irondale had a couple teams that were – that were pretty solid. Then they kind of fell off later in the decade, if I remember correctly. But unfortunately, I don't. But send me the VHS. I'd love to see it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this was a good edition of Worst Seats in the House. We will be back next week at some point between Anthony's golf game and my cigar duties at Delwood Country Club or something. Thanks to our sponsors.
Well, we can tie those two things together, probably.
Yeah, maybe what we'll start doing is just do this podcast on Sunday dinners where I can just invite myself over to eat the Akushi steaks from Kowalski. So.
Yeah, we absolutely can do that.
Yep, thanks. Great sponsors, as always, appreciated. Kowalski's, Profiled by Sanford, Bosch Law Firm, Chris Lindahl Real Estate, Minnesota Propane Association, and Aquarius Home Services. Talk next week, everybody. So much coming. It was me pretending like I'm the GM, you know, which I've done. I know I do that every day.